Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will meet with Dr. Grant Gardner, Assistant Extension Professor and Extension Specialist for Grain Marketing. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Going well. How's everybody doing today?
They're doing pretty good, Jay. We got some sunshine going on today, and then, of course, we got a front coming in. Be a little snow and whatnot mixed in with some rain, and just great calving weather. I'm just ecstatic about the next couple of days we're fixing to experience.
And we know how much you love winter.
Oh, yeah.
It's your favorite season.
Yeah, I hate it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely hate it.
You done calving heifers now?
We are done calving heifers. They all had those within a span of about 10 days, so that was good. That's a good thing about AI. You don't have to check them forever and a day. You got a period of time you have to check them, but it doesn't drag out too long.
You know, it's long since been pointed that AI is one of the quickest ways you can make any type of rapid genetic improvements in a herd.
Yep.
And I've long since been a proponent of AI for smaller producers.
Sure.
In the state of Kentucky, we average producer has 45 head of cows or less, mm-hmm. and a lot of them a lot less. We look at a lot of our herds being half that size.
Yep.
And I think anywhere is in that, you know, 5 to 10 or 15 cows, that somebody needs to be making a little more use and taking advantage of AI.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the genetic improvements you can make through that, you know, through that program is just unreal. And, you know, actually our cows are supposed to start calving this Friday, and I've already had 3 of those calves. So, normally the younger cows will calve a little quicker than the older cows. They seem to hold them for another day or two past the due date. But, you know, anything within about 10 days afterwards is pretty well AI calf.
You know, aside from all the real strides you can make in genetic improvement, when we think about the economics of our beef herd, it costs a lot to own and maintain a bull.
Yeah.
And that's really the real advantage that I thought a lot of smaller producers could have taking advantage of AIs. They don't have that added cost of production of owning and maintaining a bull.
Oh, absolutely. And they're a pain in the tail. You know, just to try to keep them separate and, you know, having the facilities to handle them and keep them separate is the problem. You know, just trying to keep them away from the cows is a big deal. So, you know, you have to learn how to manage that. And, you know, obviously AI is a great tool when used correctly. And, you know, those genetic improvements are worth a lot of money for sure. Well, and it costs a lot of money. I mean, it's not cheap. But, you know, I feel like that genetic improvement we're making in our herd is big.
And it also helps because you have that defined calving season too, like you talked about.
Yeah.
You know, that AI is really going to help you get there. So if you're not there now, but you want to get there, you know, AI is a good way to to make that happen
on
your farm.
And, you know, when you're calving heifers, you know, you're breeding to bulls that have a pretty high rate of known EPD on calving ease. And that really helps a lot. You know, folks are just turning their bull out with them heifers is not always the greatest thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're doing AI, you've got a set time that you have a due date. And so for about 10 days before and 10 days after, you know, you've shortened that time that you got to get up in the middle of the night, if that's what you do, and check on them and all that kind of stuff. So
our resident beef specialist, Vicki, is talking about defined calving season.
Y'all like that, did you? I know that's I took y'all
good.
By surprise.
You do. I like to fell out over here.
I know it.
Well,
you
know, she's exactly right, though, especially when it comes to heifers, being able to have separate breeding seasons.
Yep.
Even if you are running a herd bull with the rest of your cows, that's one of the many advantages that we have with artificial insemination.
Oh, I agree, 100%.
So we're talking about the economics of that. Our guest today is Dr. Grant Gardner. He's the new grain marketing specialist with University of Kentucky. So, Grant, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I will say I don't have much comment on the cattle side of things, but
that's
it's good
okay.
to be here.
I was absolutely going to put you on the spot and ask you something. But kind of knew that in advance. So won't you just take a few minutes, tell it a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you come to be where you are.
Yeah. So I grew up in Vincennes, Indiana, about an hour north of Henderson, Kentucky. I grew up on a corn and soybean operation and then had family members that worked in the ag industry. Just grew up around that my whole life. Spent summers working on a melon farm in Vincennes, melons and sweet corn, so produce when our operation was running slower. That took me to Purdue University, where I studied agribusiness. And while I was there, I actually could have graduated in 3 years, but I wanted to stick around because I was having too much fun. And so I actually added on an undergraduate thesis to stay at Purdue that extra year. And while I was there working with Dr. Scott Downey is who I wrote my undergraduate thesis with, but I had some conversations with him about why he wanted to be a professor and what was great about his job. And he just convinced me that being a professor was the best job in the world. And that combined with my experience in the agricultural industry. Another little side story is that we spent most Saturdays eating at a little mom and pop shop called the Vern Store. And it's where a lot of the local producers would come in and eat lunch. And so I'd sit around and listen to their problems. And it was always something that I wanted to help.
Yeah.
And so I realized that maybe continuing my education would give me the opportunity to help the producers as well as have the lifestyle that my advisor at that point in time said was his best decision of his life. Mm-hmm. And so I continued to the University of Nebraska, where I worked on a variable rate seed and nitrogen right when it was kind of starting to hit large. And so we looked at a couple trials there to figure out profitability for my master's thesis. From there, I realized that it'd be a good option to add another school, as I had multiple advisors tell me that having three different schools on the resume would improve my job opportunities. And so I went to Kansas State University. And while I was there actually the past 4 years. So when Jay introduced me, it was a little odd just to hear doctor. I don't hear that very often. It's only been a couple months now. But while I was there, I worked on multiple projects. Probably the big one that fits in well with this role is we looked at ethanol plant capitalization and land values. And so in that project, Kansas has around 13 ethanol plants within a 30-mile radius of the state line. And so what we were looking at was how farmland prices increase if they were within a 30-mile radius of those ethanol plants. And we found that as ethanol plants continued to expand and needed more feedstock, that would actually increase the land prices. On average, we found that having a ethanol plant within a 30-mile radius of your farmland would increase prices by around 10%. So some of the benefits that would be capitalized in there would be basis. You've got a better basis being closer to the plant, among other items that could just add to that land profitability. Worked on some other projects there, including work on the Ogallala Aquifer, as Kansas is mostly irrigated. Mm-hmm. And so looking at how, as the aquifer depletes, how do we continue to utilize the resource of the water to continue crop production in that area? One of the big issues I looked at was how, as the water depletes in the aquifer, the salinity content in the aquifer increases. And so we were looking at how it's well known that that salinity does affect crop yields, but how is this affecting crop use decisions or water use decisions? And so were producers using more water, trying to push that salt deeper into the soil profile, or were they using less water to try and mitigate the salt that's applied to their crops? Right now, still kind of working on that project, but we're inconclusive at the moment, so don't have a whole lot to add, but that was a major part of my dissertation.
You're a busy little feller.
I keep grinding.
Well, it's setting you up to be a good extension specialist because we, of course, all of us work in the world of extension, and we are all working and have our hands in a lot of different things as far as, you know, like we was just talking about, this podcast is about grain marketing, but we spent the first few minutes talking about livestock and AI and calving, and so, you know, we wear a lot of different hats and doing a lot of different things at the same time, it seems like. So you got a lot of experience in that just through your education, mm-hmm. Getting you ready for where you are now. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's invaluable, the experience that you have that you already bring to the table. And you know, as you develop programs and different things of this nature, you'll be able to get some experience. And, you know, I compliment the Ag Econ department for having you out early meeting farmers, and we're actually going to do some farm visits on Thursday. You know, when you're in there in McLean County, I've got a couple of set up. And so as you get out and meet people and they start depending on you for advice and for information, I think this is a great way to do it. I really do.
Yeah, it's something I'm really excited about. I mean, I've got to spend multiple days with you three in the room. And there's still so much to learn. You spend 10 years in school and then you start a job, and I'm learning more and more every day. Sure. One thing I know that I'm really going to have to work on is Kentucky geography, where the markets are at, things mm-hmm. like that. And so there's just more and more to learn, and you've just got to continue to be a lifelong learner. And I know at the beginning, I'm doing a lot of first. I mean, this is my first podcast. But and eventually I'll give not my first extension presentation, but mm-hmm. my first extension presentation in a role where my main job is extension presentations.
Right.
And so I'm going to have challenges, and just learning where those challenges occur and how I can do better in the future. And I think it's going to take time, but I'm really excited to see where my role at the University of Kentucky takes me.
You know, I'll throw one of those challenges right off to you right off the bat. And it's something that I've seen in my long career now, is there was a time when the grain marketing specialist for UK, somebody I worked with closely years ago, spent the bulk of his time in the western part of the state because that's where the grain was. Mm-hmm. But since we've seen a somewhat change in the geography of grain production in the state of Kentucky, you're going to spend a lot more time in the central part of the state, central and western. But mm-hmm. one of those biggest differences that you'll find there versus here is in the western part of the state, grain production itself takes place a lot closer to some of those termination points mm-hmm. than it does in the central part of the state.
Yep.
They haul grain a lot farther than we do out here, so they're well away from that basis. Being able to put together effective programs for each end of the state, yeah. to me, would be one of those challenges mm-hmm. because of that. So,
and the lack of grain storage in the eastern part of the state.
Absolutely.
You know, we've already, well, over lunch today, actually, we had discussions about on-farm storage the changes, the differences in county to county, even down here in the west part of the state, you know, differences. But as you go up further, you know, then you're not going to have the grain storage. And so that's going to be a completely different way of putting extension programs together.
We already gave him several ideas on what he could start working on when we were at lunch. You know, we got some different topics that, you know, that he could use and run with. So he's got a head start on the problems already.
Well, I was going to say he should have. That was an hour ago. He should have some progress made
That's
by
right.
the end of this podcast.
Now I just got to find time to get off the road and actually start working on it.
There you go. Well, good luck in the wintertime with that, doing what you're doing. But
this is the great meet and eat season is yep. my mentor used to call it, and you do. You spend a lot of time on the road. Mm-hmm. You spend a lot of time away from your family or away from even just your home base, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So that's another challenge, is getting to do all this on the road. So
And it's going to be very important for me to have some off time when producers get back in the fields, and then I think that's when I can really start building a program just bring extension programs to producers that are going to add value to the state of Kentucky. And I think that's my main goal in this role.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be on the search committee when Grant applied, and so I got to spend a little bit of time with him ahead of time before obviously today, but even before we brought him out down here to meet you guys. Mm-hmm. But talk just a little bit about your you had said early on that you really like extension, and I think you may have even attended some extension meetings as a young boy, as Jay often says, as a young boy. So just talk about that, because extension does run a little, you know, extension isn't new to you, even though you're new to this job.
Yeah. I mean, I guess when I was a young boy,
well, let's preference that you are a young boy now. So when you was a kid, let me just go. Yeah. Let's just change that.
Okay, so when I was younger, I mean, I grew up, my grandpa farmed full time, and my dad had a full time role with at that time DuPont Pioneer. But I grew up riding in the tractor with grandpa, riding in the truck, whatever. I was always on the farm, and along with that came winter days, so extension meetings, especially in the summer, hit a lot of field days, whether that be university run or industry run. Mm-hmm. And so that was just something I grew up going to. You know, at the beginning, I'm sure I was bored. But as I matured a little bit, I started to become a lot more interested in what was being presented and saw value in extension presentations. And just that I could go to a university and give some of these programs and hopefully benefit the rural ag community like the one I grew up in. That's really, it just said a lot to me that I could have that opportunity. And so that's kind of what I've dedicated my life to at this point, because I do think that, you know, it's one producer or one person at a time where you can make a difference. And so just focusing on that rural ag community is really important to me.
I don't know if you were paying any attention when you were talking, but we were all going, shaking our head back and forth. Yes, yes. You know, and it is a calling. You know, extension is a calling. You're not going to get rich, I promise you. But, you know, you have that satisfaction where at the end of the day you can go, you know, I helped somebody today. And if it's just one person, it's just one person. But, I mean, it, you know, that satisfaction is what drives a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's one of the big things, too, was I've looked at, you know, throughout the years, I've looked at a lot of other job opportunities, and there just wasn't anything that I had that passion for. Yep. I've looked at sales jobs, technology jobs, especially in the agricultural industry, and there just wasn't one thing where I thought, I could go do that the rest of my life, I think.
Yep.
Well, I think that's the difference between having a career and having a job, so to speak, is when you really do like what you do, when you really it's something that you're passionate about, it's something that you want to do. Yes, it's a job. We're all doing that because, you know, we need to get paid. It takes money to live. But it's different when you're doing it because you enjoy it, or you're just here to draw that paycheck. And your outlook on what you're doing is going to be different, too, when you're in those two different scenarios. And I think extension people, I always say extension-minded, you know, and people in extension, you often hear people say that or something along those lines, because I think it, as David said, it is a different kind of calling because of what we do, because we're not selling something. Yep. You know, we're selling education if we were selling anything, but we're not selling a product. It's not often something that we can have, you know, it's tangible in our hand that we're trying to get you to buy into. It's, we're selling our research-based information and helping you to make better decisions. And I was very impressed in the early stages, like I said, being on that committee, because you recognized that a while ago, and then you put yourself in place through education to get you to the point that you could be where you are now. And being able to realize that early on and that you wanted to do that is going to make you a great extension specialist.
Well, it is. It's going to be a definite benefit to you, because I promise you, when you get out in the counties, you get to working with the clientele that you're going to be working with. If they don't have that belief in you that you have their best interest at heart, your programs won't go very far. Mm-hmm. And that's a big, big part of it to me is, as both of these people said, you're not selling a product, but you are selling yourself. And that makes a big, big difference in this line of work.
And knowing who your audience is, too, and being able to speak to that audience, and I've seen you do that as well. And so I'm excited. I'm excited for what the future is for you.
I think another thing that stuck out in what you said, Vicki, is that, you know, as I mentioned, when I was younger, I'd go to field days that could be run by the ag industry itself or a large corporate company. And I've also been to extension meetings. And I think one thing that I really like about is extension is it does give unbiased research. It's not, the presentations aren't swung to a particular company trying to sell you a product. And I think that's important because there's got to be somebody out there doing that, or we're just going to have, you know, there's probably 10,000 agricultural companies out there. Mm-hmm. And you can't pick and choose what you want to believe because they're all telling you something different.
Yep. Right.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
Well, and all of them are right.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked a little bit about your background. We've talked about what your beliefs are and your belief in this extension system. Let's step forward into 2023. I know you've got a big background in farm management. What are some of the obstacles that you see producers facing when it comes to whether it's budgeting or the economics of the upcoming crop year? Or what are some challenges you see?
Yeah, I mean, just on the crop side and marketing, I mean, we've seen it right now. Markets are really volatile. A lot of that can be driven by politics. Some of it's driven by, I know right now I've been reading some articles that there could be high corn prices. Don't quote me on that because I'm not 100% sold on it. But the national stocks are pretty low, and so that could lead to higher corn prices. However, I did read last weekend or the drop in particularly soybeans, but also corn at the beginning of the week. That was likely caused by initial estimates of the crop coming out of South America was increased by, I believe, 7 to 8 bushels per acre. And so that caused a drop because then we're seeing more supply on the input on the export market. And so that's just some of the things to keep your eye on. From there, I mean, I think we've still got issues with high input prices, supply chain. We're still coming out of this coronavirus. And I just think that, yeah, we're going to continue to have challenges and lingering effects from that.
For sure.
Seems like there's more challenges. It's more influences, more things to influence the market now. We certainly still have the situation in Ukraine going on, even though they are able to export some grain now. That did not impact the market like I thought it would, because grain prices continued to rise even after we saw some grain coming out of there.
Yeah, you know, and it's back in the old days when Jay and I were younger, you know, it there were a certain amount of things that influenced the market. Today, it's a lot more complicated. There are 50 million things that are influencing that doesn't have anything to do with the grain market, but it influences the grain market, you know, and to keep up with that, you got to be on top of your game. I mean, you really do.
I think part of that, David, is that for a while now, we've been playing on the world market. Mm-hmm. Used to be all those influences you were speaking of were all domestic.
Yep.
Now right. We have that all the things that would influence a grain market in, you know, Russia, Ukraine, wherever, are now influencing our market
That's
as well.
Right.
South America, we're all world players.
Yep. Yep. When back then they weren't, you know, South America wasn't a big player like they are now.
Right.
They've still got some obstacles like infrastructure and some different things like that, but they still produce a ton of grain.
Yeah, right now there's a ton of speculation on the weather in South America. And so is it going to continue to rain and boost soybean yields, or are they going to hit the dry spell like some are projecting? And so that's something just to keep your eye on there. I mean, I will say it's been eye-opening to me. Coming from a PhD where I was solely focused on writing one paper and a dissertation to this role where now I'm trying to keep an eye on everything. And it's overwhelming. You know, everything we've just talked about in this podcast is, you know, how do I find the 45 minutes to an hour in every day that I can go through and look for articles of what's happened in this day that could be influencing commodity prices.
Yep.
And trying to stay ahead of what producers are going to need, because sometimes they don't know what they need. Mm-hmm. And I think in extension, sometimes we kind of have to try to be ahead of that just a little bit, because sometimes they don't know exactly, you know, and I think right. that's a struggle, I think, for all of us.
Experience is that thing, as Jay always says, that's that thing that you need after you need it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you get after you need it. So, you know, and as you get along in your career, you'll find out some of those things. And, you know, hopefully you'll be able to do better and get that experience and move on and provide some more information for folks. But
I think, you know, you had talked about the grain marketing specialist back several years ago. And I think all of us has probably worked with someone in that position, you know, and but I think now, I think the thing that's so different now that it's going to kind of open the horizon, though, I think now for this position now versus 20 years ago, is now so many of our operations actually work with a marketing company. So they're paying for that service for those to do some of that or to do that for them. And so now I think it's a unique or opportunity for you, because you're going to be able to have a little broader horizon or broader program base than what this same position would have been like 20 years ago.
But you know, even that, you know, we've had some of that going on for quite some time, but even that, I have producers that have those grain marketing specialists that they still come to my meeting.
That's right.
Because they still want to keep up with all the information they can get. So providing that great information, I mean, agree. You know, I don't think you're going to have any problem with doing that.
I mean, one, you've also got to, keep the marketers honest, too, and make sure they're following the right
that's
path
right.
or at least
right.
unbiased information.
Yep, unbiased information.
That's what we do.
And two, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity because a couple of things I'm looking at is more on the risk management side. So, I mean, there's tools in the futures and options market that we could use to hedge some risk. From there, really looking into crop insurance, I think that's something that has kind of been left out of Kentucky from what I've gathered the past few years. And so I've actually got a call on Monday, and we're going to try and figure out, you know, starting from nothing, but where do we need to start educating on crop insurance decisions?
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got other calls next week, too, because it'll actually be my first week in the office since I started the job.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's funny that you mentioned crop insurance. We were all at an economic subject matter training last week, and when Dr. Will Snell was talking, you know, about the upcoming farm bill, that the one thing that they wanted to be protected or that most folks wanted to be protected was
crop insurance. Yep.
That's a big
Having that premium covered in the farm bill.
Yep.
You know, I think that's so important, and I think you're hitting on the right subject matters already. But, you know, like you said, we've got to keep those folks honest. And, you know, I feel like it's what, from a land grant university standpoint, that's what we do. You know, they can have all their crop consultants and all this, but who do they normally call when they have a problem? They usually call us, which, and that's great, and we want to stay that way because we provide that unbiased information and that look at that crop that may be something wrong with that crop or something of this nature. So I think that's a good thing that we do.
You know, said like that, extension program should be the baseline from where most folks start their decision-making.
Right.
It should be the basis of all you do.
Yep. So hopefully Grant will be able to come in and give folks that information, and then they can do further research and get with their crop marketing specialist and, you know, that kind of thing and kind of go from there. But at least they have that baseline of information that Jay's talking about get them to a certain knowledge level. And then the stuff that they do over that, you know, you can do. But, you know, it's really hard because they're, you know, when you have an extension meeting, you have folks that are kind of are just getting started. Some folks are really, really advanced. So you try to hit the middle to try to catch everybody. And then those folks that want more information, they're going to jump on there and get more information.
That's right.
And I've had some discussions too. And I think really where I'm going to start, I think, is just crop marketing basics. Because after especially conversations in the department and with extension agents, it's just been, there hasn't been much on the marketing side for the past few years. And so if we start at the beginning, we can hopefully catch everybody up to a point to where we can get more complicated.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a great idea, you know, and you can even offer, you know, advanced crop marketing or something like that. You know, I think there would be a few people that would take that and attend that kind of meeting. So,
and I think that grain marketing is just one of those subjects too, that it doesn't hurt for you to hear it two and three and four times.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it changes. Great minds think a lot.
Changes every hour.
Yeah. And, you know, so I think that is one that you could just, you know, I think it.
Well, and every year is different.
That's right.
I mean, it changes, like you were talking about, it changes so fast. And there's what's affecting the market next year. It's not going to affect it this year. I mean, that's the crazy stuff about, you know, when Jay and I were younger, you know, corn was about $2.50, $3 a bushel. Every fall, corn is about $2.50, $3 a bushel. And as the harvest went on, it got a little cheaper. You know, and so, but we don't have that now. We don't have those kind of things that are happening. And I mean, the corn market, gosh, this fall, and of course, we had a little bit of drought in our area, but it remains strong. And I still think it's pretty strong for what I had to pay for feed the other day. I still think it's, you know, pretty strong at that. So,
you're talking about the grain market changing. I remember years ago, me and a fellow that used to be an extension agent, he works for Kentucky Department of Ag now, took a group of farmers to Chicago. We went to the Board of Trade and went to the CME. And we're on the CME that morning. We're waiting for everything to open. We're standing up looking down on the floor and watching the boards long before the days of cell phones. And the market, I remember, well, the market opened up 13 that morning from the night before, 13 cents. Well, then it was 18 cents. And then it was 25 cents. And our group of farmers was getting smaller and smaller and smaller. They were all downstairs trying to find a payphone. They were trying to sell soybeans. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Those are somewhat antiquated days of trying to get orders filled right there on the spot. But when we think about grain marketing plans, and I heard you mention this a minute ago, to you, what would be the basis of a grain marketing plan? And I'm kind of setting this up a little bit because a lot of people think of that as how they sell their grain. But a grain marketing plan is really much bigger than just selling grain for that year.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not sure if I totally understood the question, but the way I'm thinking about it would be, I mean, I would say you want to spread it out throughout the year because you're going to have different prices.
And well, I'll rephrase it for you. What are the different parts of a grain marketing plan that you would like to see somebody taking part in? Would it be a certain percentage of your crop being forward contracted? Would it be the input of puts and calls into the system, or
I think all of the above. I mean, I think they're all really important tools that I think are not used enough, especially in the industry as a whole, because I think there are good ways, especially with, you say, you know, you take a put option and you can lock in a price, and it may just be at your break even, but at least you've hedged that risk and you know you're going to break even. And then you've got the option, if prices rise, to take a higher contract, and then that's where you gain your profit. And so I think that's something that's really important to think about and something that I really want to implement in my programs. Another would be that, you know, on the futures market, you've got different prices at each point in the year. And, you know, as we get closer to harvest, those prices are going to fall, as they typically do. And so there are going to be times where, you want to put some of your crop, a certain percentage, onto the futures market. But you may want to save some back, because if you look at last year when Ukraine was invaded, we saw this huge spike. And you may want something at that time that you can sell right away and take those very high prices, because if not, you're going to miss it. And so just spreading that risk out throughout the year, I think, is going to be very important.
And figuring out, too, I think, as a producer, is just figuring out what you're comfortable with, because that becomes a big deal when you start talking to people, especially if they're just getting their feet wet a little bit about it, you know, doing a little bit more marketing them, especially if they're doing it themselves, I guess, too. But just figuring out what you're comfortable with, the risk mm-hmm. that you're willing to take, because that's always, I think, an obstacle when you're trying to do that. It's because in your mind, you're always thinking, well, if it goes higher? Mm-hmm. You know, what if it goes higher? I mean, that's with my dad, you know, I've heard that a lot of times, yeah. You know, or they'll say, you know, if you locked in a price and then it did go higher, well, I lost that money.
Yeah. And I think,
well, you lost the opportunity at right. that money.
Yeah, and yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know if any of you have all watched Ted Lasso, but one of the things in that show is to be a goldfish. And that means, you know, you made your decision, time to forget about it, and move to the next one. And I think that's the big thing with, you know, you want to sell when it's high, and if it raises a little bit after that, you still didn't lose because you sold when
right.
it was high.
Yep.
You didn't lose yep. that money, and no one's going to hit the highest peak all the time.
Right.
You know, and knowing that cost of production is mm-hmm. so big, and to knowing all that. But, you know, you would think in today's day and time that we'd all be really good grain marketers and experts, really. I mean, as much stuff is going on. But there are so many people still that don't understand what the grain market is and how basis works and how all these different things work. Nobody wants to admit it, but there are mm-hmm. lots of people that don't understand all the information about the grain market. There really is.
And it's complicated. I mean, for one example, I was talking to a producer last week, and he said, you know, when I went through college at UK, I was taught that basis is just the cost of transport. And he goes, and then we go through recent years, and I don't know what's going into it now.
Right.
And yeah. honestly, there's a lot of economists that don't know what's going into it, because there's yeah. so many factors that we can't dissect them all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what you get into. So, you know, hopefully we can all, as Grant learns and researches about this, that we can all learn together and hopefully, you know, come out on the other side a lot better off. But that information, I think, is going to be invaluable to folks. I really do.
Yeah, if there was a crystal ball, that'd be a great thing to have in grain marketing.
Well, if we had a crystal ball.
Or in a lot of areas.
I wouldn't be working
here.
That's right.
That was exactly my point. We probably, none of us would be doing what we're doing
now. And my
now.
Point is there is no crystal ball.
Yeah. That's the shame of it.
There is no, but that's why you have a lot of these other opportunities and tools that you can reach from and gain information from. And I think, too, it's important for producers to have the right people around the table for them. You know, because every operation's different. Every, you know, what you can do and can't do, how much grain storage you have. Like you all talk about, how far do you have to drive? How many acres do you have? I mean, and your cost of production, there's so many different things and facets that go into that, that you've got to have the right people around the table, because you're not going to know everything, and none of us know everything.
And, you know, that's the great thing about Extension, and you know, your county Extension agent's not going to be an expert grain marketer, but he's going to be able to call somebody like Grant that's going to be able to help you, you know, and that's kind of what, to me, that's, you know, what Grant saw when he was younger about Extension programs. I think that's what we all strive for, and we all try to help people and better understand so they can make a decision that affects their bottom line in a positive way. That's kind of, to me, that's what kind of Extension is all about.
I agree.
So
I agree 100%. Yeah. I know a lot of your background has been in farm management, you know, making farm management decisions that hopefully improve your operation. So, you know, if some of our listeners out there are maybe new into farming, or you know, or maybe they're thinking about adding some kind of a new enterprise or something, you know, talk just a little bit about, you know, some things that these folks need to be thinking about when they start trying to make decisions, especially if they're going to expand or add enterprise or something like that. What are some things on the management side that they really need to be thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, at the simplest roots, I think you've got to look at, what's it going to cost me to buy this new piece of equipment? How much time is it going to take me to learn to implement it? Because there's a cost to everybody's time. And then, you know, what's the break even? So how many years is it going to take me to pay this equipment off to where I'm finally making a profit by adopting this piece of equipment? And I think that's going to be really important for anything you're adding to your operation, whether that's land, equipment, or just technology to help you make farm decisions. Everything's got to have a break even, and it's got to bring it's got to bring an upside and profit to your operation. And so that's really important to look at.
Yeah, because there is no one size fits all.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, if you look at just the state of Kentucky or even just Western Kentucky, every operation is different. And so there's not going to be one thing that fits every operation.
Right. Well, and I think, too, we had our Tri-County Grain Day today, of course. And one of the things that Dr. Jordan Shockley talked about was putting that business plan into place. And I think, you know, producers in general, they like to be out. They like to be in the tractor, or they like to be out working in the fields. That's the enjoyable part of it, you know. But the tough part sometimes is the business plans and the marketing plans and putting all that kind of things together. But just talk just a little bit about the importance of that business plan and how that is going to kind of set the stage maybe for.
Yeah. You know, that's something that I think was really good today, because I saw Jordan's presentation and I saw kind of how I could piggyback off this presentation if you put us in the same room together, because he does a really good job of covering business plans, break even, everything that is controllable by the producer themselves, where I look more at the markets. So that could mostly on the sales side, so crops. But you've got to have, you want to lower your break even price or your cost of production, and then you don't have as much to worry about on the grain marketing side. And so that's really important to think about. And I think then after that presentation, I can come in and kind of look at, okay, well, on top of that, where can we hedge some of these risks and make sure that you have a productive year and you're going to profit?
Yep, that's right. I mean, perfectly said. I mean, but I think the point of a lot of things that we've said today is there's a lot of moving parts.
A lot of moving parts, and as we both said at the same time, they move together sometimes.
Yes, they
change, and they change pretty rapidly. So one of the things we mentioned at the top of this show is that we would wrap things up like we usually do with a timely tip for the week. And our timely tip for this week is to start your plan, get your plan together for marketing your 2023 crop. We're early in January right now, midway of the month, I guess you could say, but in a couple of months, we're going to be in the field. It's not going to be long at all. And by that point, folks will know their acres. They know their intended acres now, and they can start formulating some of those plans. So anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, just currently, I mean, I mentioned it earlier in the show, but I think the two big things to keep your eye on would be, one, the United States grain stocks, because they are pretty low. But however, if we start to see more yield increases in South America, we're going to see that price decrease. And so I'm not sure exactly what way it's going to go. I don't think anybody is. I read competing pieces of information every day. But those are just the two biggest things you want to keep an eye on. And, you know, if you think it's high now, I'd sell high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and two, I'll just kind of put in one of them plugs that, you know, you talk about, that what the plugs we put in. But if you're not as comfortable in grain marketing and you want to learn a little bit more, contact your county extension office. We've said before, if you're listening here in Kentucky, there's an extension office in every county throughout the state of Kentucky. If for our listeners, it's outside the state of Kentucky, you know, reach out to your extension service there, and they'll be able to get you some information and put you in contact with the folks that we need to, that will be able to be able to help you. So, you know, just I'd encourage you to reach out to those.
Yeah, and to add on to that, please, if you have anything that you think would add to my programming in the future, I mean, I've got years to build a program, but I'm still looking for ideas, and my information is on the University of Kentucky Ag Econ website. Send me an email, give me a call. I'd love to talk to you.
Right.
You know, just about every time we do this show, Grant, we talk about coming away with an idea for another show. And several times I heard you talk about risk and finding that comfort level. I think we could do an entire show on helping producers find that level of risk that they're comfortable for operating mm-hmm. within, because it's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to say, Ed. I mean, everybody's risk level is different. My son is a bigger risk taker than I am, I can assure you. And I think I get that from my dad. I mean, it's just the times that they grew up and how we were raised. But, you know, John David is way more comfortable making risky, as far as I'm concerned, risky decisions and putting his, you know, sticking his neck out more so than I am.
You know, knowing your son and what a good guy he is, he's got a lot less gray in his hair than we do. He's got more time to recover some of those decisions.
That is correct.
I'm catching up pretty quick.
We want to take the time to mention right quick a program that's going to be taking part in some adjoining counties in Vicki and Mai's area. Katie Hughes and Jessica James, they're the ag agents in Union and Henderson County, respectively. Going to be having a program on February 23rd known as Stepping Forward in Agriculture Conference. It's going to be at the Henderson County Expo Center from 8 to 3 there on February 23rd. So we want to take a chance. They're good co-workers of ours. We do a lot of things together, and we wanted to try to plug their program for them while we were at it. So
absolutely.
Make sure anybody that has any questions, contact us, and we can put you in the right spot to get registered for that if you'd like. So with that, Grant, thanks for sitting down with us. We appreciate you being here.
I'm happy to be here. It was a great time.
Absolutely. It was a good time. We appreciate you doing this with us, and we want to thank you and thank our host for this week's show, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.